Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889, and by French Market Coffee, locally roasted in New Orleans for 125 years. From our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. Since its founding in 1970, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Fest has become one of the preeminent music festivals in the world. But anyone who's attended the fest knows there's a lot more to the experience than just the music. There's the food. Each Jazz Fest booth is a virtual mini restaurant kitchen, complete with hot and cold running water, gas, and electricity. That's where master electrician Louis Broussard comes in. He's the man who helps turn the power on at the fairgrounds, a place he's frequented since childhood. Wait till you hear his food memories from the days when his father worked at the fairgrounds. Louisiana Eats house band Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes join us for a peek backstage and give us the scoop on what fueled their latest CD, Sketch. Can't afford a ticket to the Jazz Fest? There's plenty of action just outside the gates. We'll take you there for a visit with some unauthorized vendors who run illicit pop-up bazaars and meet the customers who frequent them. Welcome to the festival on this week's Louisiana Eats. Every week, after the news bulletin, the anticipation gradually builds until we hear that telltale theme song. Da-da-dum, da-dum-dum, da-da-dum. Which, of course, was composed and recorded for us by none other than Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. We sat down with the boys, fresh off the heels of completing their new CD, the one they call Sketch, to talk about the CD, their past experiences at Jazz Fest, and, of course, food.
Hi, this is Mark Parody, a.k.a. Johnny Sketch. I play cello, guitar, and I sing for Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes.
Hello, my name's Andre Boren, and sometimes they call me Dirty Johnny, and I play drums and sing with Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes.
Your mother will be so proud.
My name is David Pomerleau, and I sing and play the bass in Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes.
My name is Omar Ramirez. I am also known as Johnny Rico, and I play the trumpet in Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes.
Welcome back to Louisiana Eats, boys. I'm always thrilled to see you guys.
Hey, Poppy.
You know, just for the record, we have to give the big shout out to Cousin Dave over there, Pomerleau, who, because of him getting a special idea every week when people listen to Louisiana Eats, what are they listening to, guys?
The theme music from Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes for my lovely cousin, Poppy Tooker.
Do you know what the name of that song is? It's called Let's Eat.
Well, let's eat. But before we eat, let's talk. So you guys have a new CD coming out.
Yes, we do.
What's the name of it?
It's self-titled.
Sort of self-titled.
It's the word on the cover is Sketch.
Sketch.
But there's no like official name really. It's just Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Tell me why.
Where did you all record the latest CD?
We recorded at a place called the Living Room over in Algiers, underneath the bridge. It's an old church that's been converted into a studio. The guy, Chris George, runs it, and he's got a whole bunch of old musical instruments and studio equipment and a lot of great microphones, and he makes some really nice records over there.
We prepared for this by going to Bay St. Louis, the Comiskey House in Bay St. Louis, and coming up with about 9 songs that we've been playing steadily for the last year and a half or so. So the experience of recording the CD we were prepared for it. In the past, we've gone in the studio and had to write things in the studio, and this time we were ready to do it.
How long was that Johnny Sketch conference at the Comiskey compound?
The retreat was 2 days.
Just two full days.
Wow, and y'all wrote enough music for...
We actually came up with something like 11 ideas, but of those, I think nine became songs that are on, or eight or nine became songs on the record.
He's hanging on your lies, see it in your eyes, the way you're stringing him along. So stop for a second.
When y'all work together in that capacity, what is the creative process like?
Well, in this case, it's a kind of a newer approach. We kind of just got together. We had some ideas that we brought that we'd been working on before, and we would just kind of start playing them, and really just, it was the three of us, we would just sit together and kind of bash it out until we got somewhere with it and try to come up with an arrangement and then move on and do something else.
Break for lunch.
Yeah, we would go out and wade in the water and hang around, and then we would come back and revisit things until we felt like we came to a stopping point with them. And it's amazing how much you can get done doing that. You know, it really helps to have a starting point. But many of the ideas would just, we would just come in and someone would play something and we would feed off of it. It was very collaborative. It was really different than we've done it in the past in some ways. We've always worked together on songs, but it was very much the three of us kind of getting through it together.
Well, you said, and kind of feed on it. So what exactly was the feed fueling that summit?
On that trip, what did we bring? We brought all our own food, and I remember we were trying to get, we tried to keep it like reasonably healthy, I think, as I recall.
Yeah, because we wanted to be productive.
Yeah, we didn't bring like a bunch of bags of Doritos and stuff. We're getting up there in age, Poppy. We're not young bucks anymore. We've got to put some vitamins in these tanks, you know.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I think we just made Andre cook.
Yeah, I think Dre just cooked everything, probably.
See a stone laid in the sand. What are you eating in the recording studio these days?
We had some like granola bars.
Granola bars.
Yep.
There was a lot of hot tea floating around and emergency pouches for the, you know, gotta stay healthy in the studio.
Yeah, and we had things like, we were eating a lot of like mixed nuts and there was dried fruit at one point.
We're still very much fueled by sandwiches.
Yeah, that's true, but it was still felt like a bit of a departure. Like we had grown up. I just remember looking around and thinking, this is a pretty responsible group of guys. I don't think any of us drank at all the whole time we were in there. I didn't, or I don't remember drinking much of anything. Might have had a beer or something. But
on older records, we had a producer who would just give us the studio, and we were able to do whatever we wanted. And this was very much the clock's ticking. Every hour is very expensive. So, you know, I think we wanted to order pizzas and sit around and have, you know, big dinners and lunches, but you really can't do that. You have to be quick.
We do well with the deadline.
Well, and honestly, you know, eating a little lighter and kind of snacking throughout the day kept us more on task. Mm-hmm. You know, if you take a big lunch break and you go get a bunch of 12-inch po' boys and you come back from work to work and it's a little, you know.
The tempos are a little slower.
Yeah, right. The drums are a little, they're slowing down a little bit.
Y'all are freaking me out. You're acting so grown up.
Don't be fooled. I'm going to go get some cocktails as soon as I leave here. So. And a 12-inch sandwich.
Well, I really wanted to pick your brains about your Jazz Fest experiences, because you all have been consistently appearing at the festival for over a decade now. So you must have a panoply of great memories, and things certainly changed over that period of time. I remember, I think the first time I saw you all at the festival, you were on the Gentilly stage.
That's right. Well, the first year we did play the Jazz Fest, we were on the Acura stage.
The first?
Yeah, that was in 2005. We were supposed to play in 2004, and it was rained out. And I think maybe as a kind of a act of pity, they gave us a really excellent set the next year, which was ended up being our debut performance. So we were on the Acura stage at 3:30 in the afternoon, which is also Dave Matthews was headlining that night on the same stage. I think probably when we played, there was at least 30,000 people in the field, maybe more. It was basically as full as it was going to get because so many people came early to hear Dave Matthews. Now, that's kind of a double-edged sword. Yeah, we got to play for an ocean of people, but most of that ocean of people were just waiting for Dave Matthews.
I bet you got some new fans out of that crowd.
No, we definitely did, and I'll play for an ocean of anybody, no matter what the circumstances. So it was pretty spectacular.
Well, take us along with you on a day at the festival. How does it go? Do you get good parking?
Well, you either park in the Gentilly lot or the Acura stage lot, and they really have it all organized beautifully, so you're just whisked away
to wherever you need to be.
And some years we'll do CD signings, and you know you finish playing and you take a breath, and they say, "Okay, come on, we got to go to the CD signing," and they whisk you away to that, and it's just really well run, and they take care of the artists beautifully. You know,
they do a really smart thing too, which the first few years I didn't understand because. So why can't we have a van and a trailer, why can't we just pull it up behind the stage and load it out? I mean, we were getting out of one van, putting all of our gear into another van. They were driving us back there. And now that I'm a little older, I realize it's probably a smart thing to not have a bunch of musicians driving amongst, you know, 100,000 pedestrians on a dirt track who don't really know where they're going. It seems like a slightly more responsible situation. And it works. And like Dave said, it works really well. They've got it down to clockwork.
So how do they feed you at the festival? What's craft service like?
Well, standard fare backstage food is, you know, you get your ice chest full of sodas and beers, and then you get your deli tray, which is like every backstage in America and elsewhere, I'm sure. Little triangle sandwiches with the crust cut off. And hey, don't get me wrong, I think we're all pretty big fans of those.
I can eat a lot of those.
Those sandwiches are pretty good.
Party sandwiches. Those aren't deli.
Well, whatever you want to call them.
From New Orleans, party sandwiches.
Okay, party sandwiches, darling.
But in general, I don't think the bands accept the Jazz Fest gig for the backstage catering. Ah.
No. We did have a deal going with tips for a while where we said, hey, Tipitina's. We will grace you with our presence, but we require Popeye's chicken. And they honored that for a while, but I think they've given up on the chicken. We didn't get it the last time.
Oh.
It's probably better. It's not the best pregame food.
It's the after game.
It's an after, yeah. Right. By then, everybody's eaten it.
Everybody's eaten it, and all that's left is the bones.
Well, yeah. We have had some fun with Popeye's fried chicken before. Remember the time that you all were throwing fried Popeye's hand pies from the stage at around 2 o'clock in the morning? They were strawberry.
I will never forget that.
Winging those pies from the stage at Tipitina's, that was wild.
It was
awesome. People couldn't believe it.
In this city, we're used to having things thrown to us from the Mardi Gras tradition. But most of that stuff about a week later just kind of looks like garbage, you know? Not garbage per se, but it doesn't serve any purpose. It goes into a bag and you forget about it for 360 days. Popeye's hand pie has immediate appreciable value, especially at 2 a.m. when you've been drinking at a show. That was like throwing money into the crowd. People's faces lit up. And I think at the Maple Leaf one time we had
a fried chicken flash mob.
And we put a bunch of boxes out on the bar, and then we passed boxes over the crowd like they were crowd surfing through, and everybody took a winger. It was so cool. And there's nothing better than watching a crowd that's dancing and eating chicken at the same time. It's a very New Orleans moment for me. Oh, never falls. Exasperating fools who fail to heed the call. He's a right man. Got a power wrong. He's calculating victory until the dawn. Goes on.
What is it like when you get that new CD in your hand for the very first time?
I'm just glad it's over.
Yeah, I think that's really the main feeling is just good. We finished. By the time you get it, We've heard mixes over and over again. We've finally heard the mastered copy several times. By the time you get the copy, it really is mostly just a feeling of good. We're done now, because it's not like, you know, we get to excitedly put it in and see what it sounds. We already know what it sounds like.
Right.
So when you finally have the copy, it's really nice to see the artwork, to hold it in your hand. It's very satisfying, and you're kind of already like moving on to let's do something with it, you know.
The last time I listened to this record will probably be next month sometime, and then I won't listen to it again for another 5 years.
Well,
you know?
Now you're going to be playing it all the time,
right? Exactly.
Right. Well, and when we sell our first million, I think I'll listen to it again.
Oh, that's a good idea. Well, yeah. We'll see how far we can just make that happen.
This record's going to at least go aluminum, I predict.
Aluminum?
Dozens of copies.
Dozens
sold.
Of copies will be sold.
You're going to get the first copy, Poppy.
Well, thank you,
the Poppy
guys.
Copy, first off the presses. And by the way, thanks so much for including us on your show. It is my favorite radio show in all the land.
Our friends, the Louisiana Eats House Band, Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes.
Like a champagne dry, a little smoke in my eye.
When we return from a short break, we'll take you right to the gates of the fairgrounds, where, against all rules, unauthorized vendors annually ply their wares. Stay tuned.
Give it up to your soul. You better hang on tight. We're gonna find a bump in the night.
There's a party going on.
Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Rouse's Markets and from Ralph Brennan's Redfish Grill. From dock to pot, offering 9 varieties of fresh Gulf fish daily. Lunch, dinner, and private events at 115 Bourbon Street in the French Quarter.
And what is number one? The party going on right now. Party! Thank you. There's definitely a party going on. I love the way you love to live.
Along with the dazzling lineup of musicians that Jazz Fest brings together year after year, there's a whole other world that exists just beyond the festival gates. This world has vendors of all kinds, from water guys and praline makers to makeshift mixologists who set up shop along the streets despite apparent rules that would dictate otherwise. In collaboration with Nola V, producer Sarah Holtz ventured out to the fairgrounds neighborhood with reporter Kelly Crawford to meet some of the vendors and buyers just outside of Jazz Fest.
Welcome to the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, presented by the Shell. No unauthorized vendors. No
$1. $1. Ice cold water.
Are you always out of Jazz Fest?
Oh, you every year. 17 years of this.
17 years?
Mm-hmm.
So, do you have a year that sticks out in your mind that you're like, this was my best year?
Right after Katrina, the first year after Katrina, when they sit up there and started getting things back together, Jazz Fest went off the hill, and
really?
It was beautiful.
Aww.
Yes, but y'all enjoy yourself,
yeah,
now.
Yeah, good luck today.
All right, thank you.
Can you tell us just how it's going for Jazz Fest with the Jello Shots?
Oh, well, it's actually for, like, through Liuza's, but it's going great. A lot of people are just eating them up. You know, it's so hot out here, so it's perfect.
We got free kisses.
Oh, you got free kisses?
Yeah, we got free kisses.
Yeah. You kiss the dog.
Yeah,
kiss the dog.
Yeah. Kiss him, boo. My friend did it last year. We stole her idea. The puppy is a new addition, though.
All right, so Camp Mystery, we've got people in the window with a balloon. There's a bubble machine going off. You can definitely take pictures in their cutout heads of a man and a woman in swimsuits in a canoe. They've got a sign that says Happy Jazz Fest from the Bubble House. And we're not sure if they're selling anything.
This entrance is only for people who are paid by Jazz Fest to be here. If you paid to be at Jazz Fest, 2 blocks up, left on Sauvage.
So what's your biggest seller?
Yellow lemonade, regular.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Not the baked goods?
They like the brownies, yeah, but they be looking for something special in the brownies.
Do you get asked that a lot? They're like, are they...
All day, and then they ask if they have alcohol in the lemonade all day.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, is there anything that's ever happened out here that you're like, this is the strangest thing that's ever happened to me?
Kind of, like, a lady, she was pulling out her, I thought she was pulling out her wallet. And she was pulling out her phone, and she took a picture of the lemonade. She said she had to take a picture because of Beyonce's new album.
This is our first time.
It is?
Yes, because our kids, we are from Audubon Charter School, and our kids are going to France next year in an exchange program.
Oh.
So we are raising money to try to get everybody there.
Really?
So this year we have somebody who has a house on the route, so we just said, okay, let's do this.
That's
so we are selling water and mimosa. And all the kids, 28 of them, will go to France in October.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
One mimosa.
One mimosa. Here you go, lady.
Woohoo!
Okay.
The sobering of the rain at Jazz Fest that occurs, and you get cold and you're just absolutely miserable. We've all been there. And the one thing that makes that all better is to have a glass of champagne. It makes the misery of the rain turn into a sunshine in your brain. Polly. Oh, is she just giving away for free?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, sir, let me give you this. Okay, I give these out the last day.
Thank you very
because
much.
Because of the bad weather, I may not see you at the end of the day.
Oh, well,
all right.
Thank you again for everything. We
thank
really
you. Have
it.
A great Jazz Fest. Yes, ma'am. I give these out to the folks who park over here. It's just Lanyap. I enjoy the people. Like I said, this is my fourth year, and it's almost like, well, I've established relationships with several people. And, you know, I send cards out when it's 6 months before Jazz Fest. And we email each other. Like I said, it's a family affair. What do people do after Jazz Fest? Everybody can't go to Disney World. Okay?
Right.
But they have. They remember this. And we just, you know, it's just how it is on Jazz Fest, the last day. They don't even have to, no charge for the bikes?
This is free. Where have you been?
I parked in poles. This is terrible.
Free.
It's free. Get in where you fit in today.
What happened?
That's
happened?
What it is.
She's the best.
Really? Okay, this is what it is. All right, Jazz Fest ready.
That's right, enjoy.
Yes, will do. The door is always open.
Oh, good.
Have a good day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sounds and stories outside the gates of Jazz Fest.
Hey, girls. I know that you heard about the big star reviewers coming to town tonight. Well, I just want to give you the lineup of some of the big stars who'll be on the show there.
If you're a Louisiana Eats listener, I bet you're as excited over the food at Jazz Fest as you are the music. Wouldn't you love to have a Jazz Fest cookbook? In 1984, New Orleans-famed cooking teacher Lee Barnes, along with longtime Fest vendor Lorraine Landry, set out to create the first edition of the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival cookbook. What a treasure this out-of-print 30-plus-year-old book is. It's laid out by tent numbers, and believe it or not, in 1984, there were only 5 food tents at Jazz Fest. Out of all the vendors listed in the book, only Bricadas, Bocris on Sausage, AJ Snowballs, Cajun Kettle Foods, and the Roman Taffy Candyman still appear at the festival today. But what unforgettable food superstars were festival vendors at one time. The great chef Austin Leslie served shrimp creole and stuffed peppers at the Jazz Fest. His recipes for both of those classic dishes made it into the book. For a copy of Austin Leslie's recipes, just visit our website at poppytooker.com, where you'll also find a treasure trove of other great things to cook. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats.
You know, brother and sister, there are some things a man gotta do. No matter how it seems to others, when he carry that load, that heavy load, to have a little pay. Come the end of the week, you have to let it all hang out, no matter what the people might say. Dig, I tell you, there's nothing like a neighborhood. A little individual sound that makes you feel so good when you're stepping out.
If you're a regular Jazz Fest goer, you may have seen Louis Broussard whipping around the track on a golf cart, ensuring electricity is properly flowing to food booths and sound stages alike. A master electrician, Louis has worked the festival since 1988. But he's no newcomer to the New Orleans fairgrounds. In fact, he just about grew up there. Lou joined us to share stories from his childhood spent in and around the racetrack.
That was a lot of memorable days for me. I wish I can go back to them, to tell you the truth. I had so much fun in that place. That was my playground. I can remember from maybe around 7 or 8, I was out there hanging with my dad, and my mom came to visit, and put me on this pony and send me around the backside of the barn, and I come running around the back with the pony, and my mom almost fell out.
Well, what was your dad's job there? What did he do?
He was a horse groom. He took care of race horses for certain people, and his main job was to take care of the Fairground Corporation race horses.
Your daddy had almost like a little mini farm out there, huh?
He did. He had Milliton. He had eggplant, tomatoes. He didn't grow very much okra, but the snap beans, beautiful. My mother couldn't wait to get her hands on them.
There were some animals too, huh?
Yes. We had 2 goats, 1 cow, about 400 ducks, about 300 chickens, and a cage full of pigeons.
Pigeons?
Yes.
Yep. You were eating the pigeons.
We were eating the babies. And my father would have me go into this loft and take them out of the nest just before they would come down on the ground and start eating.
Because they would be so tender and beautiful then?
Fat. Buttery fat.
So I guess you would pick vegetables, and every day there was a regular bounty that your mom was cooking?
Yes. I can remember going on my bicycle after school, going to the fairgrounds, and my dad had a big bag of whatever he would pick, and he'd tell me, when you go home, just make sure mom get it, you know. And it worked out fine. We ate good. We had plenty of chickens to eat, plenty of ducks to eat.
So with all that delicious food that you were bringing home every day, what are some of the favorite things that your mom used to cook up for you?
When she wanted to stew a hen, my dad didn't want to give up none of the girls.
Oh.
He loved his girls.
And because they were egg producers, too.
Were they? We had, we also had a double yolk at that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Beautiful eggs.
So how did it go with the hen?
They would go round and round, but my mom always win. I wind up bringing the hen home sometime, too. You know?
And she would stew it up?
Oh, yes. And you talk about fresh stewed hen? Brown gravy with green peas in it, all the other little specials she would put in it, and her wonderful potato salad. You couldn't beat it.
Oh, yum. What was special about her potato salad?
Mom just had the right technique.
Oh, it's all in the hands.
Flip of the wrist. Her spoon was broke into it, I guess. You know.
Did she preserve anything? Did she can or put anything up?
Not a thing. You very seldom found leftovers in our refrigerator.
Well, I loved the way you described to me that, you know, nowadays we would call this a CSA, Community Supported Agriculture. And your dad was kind of running a little CSA there because he was raising so much food, He was sharing it. Tell us about that.
When it was time to harvest whatever vegetable or whatever he was growing, he would also prepare different bags for the people that worked in the general office of the fairgrounds. He would feed them also. And when we would harvest ducks, I would bring 12, 14 ducks already clean up at the general office for the people so they can have ducks, and also the chickens and also the baby pigeons.
And how long did this go on for?
Up to maybe 12, 14 years my father did that.
What are some other things that you remember about raising that food, working with your dad, and hanging around the track?
Okay. When the races would leave for the summer, the infield would grow wild and crazy. And before the turf track came, there was a ditch. I used to catch crawfish in the ditch right there.
Oh, gosh.
Right at the stretch before the infield. There's two ponds there. The back pond, I used to catch yellow-bellied catfish. I'd catch two fish, bring them to my dad. He would send me to Terranova's grocery to get a po'boy bread. Uh-huh. And that would be our lunch.
Well, that is so amazing, Lou, to think about the fairgrounds and what a self-sustaining place that was. People thought that all that delicious eating at the fairgrounds started with the festival. It's been going on, huh?
Yes. And we've had a lot of good times out there.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come and share these delicious memories of a childhood at the racetrack.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I know if my father was alive, he would too.
Louis Broussard, Jazz Fest master electrician, sharing tales of his home away from home at the New Orleans Fairgrounds.
In my younger days, I wished I know then like I know now. In my younger days, I wish I know then like I know now.
What is the biggest food story at Jazz Fest? Stay tuned, and we'll answer that question when we come right back.
For this little woman to let me in her house.
I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, and from French Market Coffee. French Market Coffee's premium blend beans are locally roasted in small batches, creating a coffee that can only be called New Orleans Bold. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. What is the biggest food story at Jazz Fest? It all starts at the top with food director Michelle Nugent. Michelle manages a staff of almost 30 people in the food department during the many weeks the festival is in residence at the fairgrounds. By the end of March, when construction starts, Julie Posner's job begins. For almost 20 years, Julie has worked with Michelle, coordinating daily meals for about 300 people who are responsible for the build-out, then breakdown of the festival grounds. Add in backstage craft services, and you've got one monster job. Additionally, the health department sets up an office on site to ensure that everything you eat at the festival is sure to be served at proper temperatures and in sanitary conditions. So the next time you chow down on your favorite festival food, remember to thank the amazing staff and hundreds of volunteers who make the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival the most delicious fest on earth. That is some real Louisiana eats. Versatility is the trademark of Chef Ann Churchill's business, Karma Kitchen. Ann's vegetarian and vegan creations are so delicious that even the most dedicated carnivores delight in every bite of her food. Highly sought after as a caterer, you can find Ann dishing up her delicacies all over town. But when she's not in New Orleans, Ann's on the road, fueling superstars like Dave Matthews with her healthy, delicious cuisine. Ann spoke with us about her life on the road as a touring chef and how food became her life.
Well, I always loved cooking, and it wasn't really an option as a career path, you know, when I was younger. And it was, you know, you'll go to college and you'll do this. And so I did, and taught high school for 6 years and worked in video production and did a number of things, worked in television for a while, and always loved cooking and thought, gosh, I would love to do that for a living, but it just didn't seem feasible. And then I was living in San Francisco and working for Make-A-Wish Foundation and ended up running a marathon and raising money for team and training. And I just had this epiphany while I was running, because it is a really interesting psychological thing that happens when you're running 26.2 miles. You have a lot of time to reflect. And these walls kind of broke down, and I just thought, well, being scared of stuff's just silly. And so I thought, if I wasn't scared of anything, what would I do? And I realized that I'd cook. So when I moved back here, I applied to Delgado and worked at Bourbon House as an apprentice when I was in the program, and worked at Bayona for Susan Spicer, which was amazing. And then just went out on my own. I already knew that I wanted to start a catering business. And right as I was starting, Kate and Jane from Bridge Lounge, the former owners, they gave me a call and they said, we really want to do food here. That was a great launching pad. And so I really owe them tremendously for that. It got my name out there and people could come in and taste my food. So after the storm, a kitchen became available, and a friend of mine bought the kitchen with the understanding that I would rent it in the Bywater. And it was right around the corner from my house. So set up shop there and just started feeding all the people who didn't have a kitchen anymore, and it just went from there. Did food at Bacchanal for a while, and
yeah, we never know where you're going to turn up next. That's the kind of girl you are.
I like to surprise people.
So, Ann, how did you and your food come to the attention of the Dave Matthews Band?
I was really fortunate. I already had a little bit of a working relationship with Piety Street Studios, and I live on Piety Street, so I knew them already. And they'd had my food. I got to cook for the River in Reverse, Elvis Costello and Ellen Toussaint, when they recorded. I got to feed them, which was really exciting.
Yeah.
And so there was already a precedent there. And I was at a Christmas party at the Country Club, and Sean Hall said, we might have a band coming in that might need a caterer, and we can't tell you who it is yet. I'm thinking, big band? I'm like, Rolling Stones? What? You know? And they said they might want to bring in their own chef. They haven't decided, but we're trying to tell them they should use you. And I was like, well, worst case scenario, some chef comes in, I rent out my kitchen.
Yeah.
But I thought it would be really fun to cook for whoever this mysterious entity is. And so I was in the kitchen washing my dishes one day, and I get a call, you know, this is Cara from Dave Matthews Band, and my knees went to rubber.
Yeah, I bet.
And can you send us some menus? And so I did, and started cooking for them, and it was a really, they stayed here for several months and really did.
Which album were they working on?
This was Big Whiskey and the Grugrux King, which Big Whiskey is New Orleans, and the Grugrux King is a reference to Leroy, the band member who passed away. So it was a tribute to him in a sense, and he loved New Orleans, so they decided, what a great idea to record here and, you know, support New Orleans in the aftermath of that man-made disaster.
So you send off your suggested menus, and do they pick and choose, or do they start to tweak what they want from you right away?
They just wanted a feel for what I did. So it was more, oh, she gets it. She'll be able, you know, do the kind of food that we want. So I didn't have to stick to any. I got to make it up every day and have fun. So I got to go to the market and see what was really nice and see what fish purveyors had really nice fish. And so it was really fun. But as a party chef, I didn't have the giant repertoire because, you know, I'd have a bunch of different things I did, but I didn't have to come up with 3 different entrees every single night and to not repeat them. So that got to be really interesting and fun and sometimes challenging. Like, what am I going to feed them tonight? Oh my gosh.
How did it then occur that they said, come on, Anne, let's go?
Well, I was setting up one night and someone said something about a tour chef. And I said, what's a tour chef? And they said, oh, those are the chefs that travel around and cook for us. And I said, that's a job. And I think I said a couple of expletives too, involving kidding me.
Yeah, I bet.
And they said, you'd be interested? And I said, well, yeah. And I was, you know, newly single and just thought, I could pick up and take off for months at a time. Sure. And so they made a call and I started working for their catering team, so which is 4 chefs and a front of house dining room person and a crew chief and then someone else who handles stocking the dressing rooms and stocking all the buses and that sort of thing.
Wow. Okay, well, walk us through exactly how this works. You go on the road with the band. So where are you doing the cooking?
Well, we have in our rider that is advanced to the venue. This is the summer tour. The summer tour is outdoors. They're an amphitheater, so we're outdoors. So they're supposed to provide us with a tent of certain diameter, and then that they have to provide us with refrigeration. They provide us with tables, and they provide us with a few prep cook dishwasher people, which on a good day, they're very competent, and on a bad day,
you're washing the dishes.
Sometimes we have to jump in, and that's a bad day is when we have to jump in and wash dishes. We set up the tables and set up the refrigerators, and some things are pre-shopped for breakfast. So the lead chef goes out to the store and buys stuff for lunch and dinner. The remaining 3 of us show up and get everything ready. Then all these road cases come off of a truck with 3 convection ovens, pots, pans, an entire pantry, a whole front of house with chafing dishes and a giant coffee case. And it's pretty amazing the amount of equipment. And so all that comes out. We set up and organize the kitchen, get power from the venue, set up our ovens. And then we crank out breakfast for about 85 people and keep that going. And then the lead chef shows up, Fiona, and we unload everything and talk about lunch and then crank out lunch. And then as soon as lunch is out, we talk about dinner and keep lunch going while we get dinner ready and crank dinner out for 5 o'clock. And then that goes till 8 or 8:30. How quickly I forget.
and then
we pack everything up and
move
get
on
the bus
and
do it again. Yeah.
Wow. So were there any disasters?
Well, there was this one weather situation in Canandaigua. The setup they had for us was not ideal, and there was a giant lightning and thunderstorm, and it was getting water in our cases and blowing things over, and we couldn't set up everything, and so we had to wing it. And I basically found a little alcove inside and cranked out breakfast while the guys outside tried to wrestle, you know, with flying tarps and all of that. So that was pretty intense. You know, it's the same with catering or with restaurants as well. It's just you think you're not going to pull it off, and then all of a sudden you're like, I can't believe I just pulled that off again. So there's a lot of that.
Yeah, that's the food secret. So in all your travels with the band, were there any favorite venues that you worked?
There are a few that I really like, but one of my favorites is called Shoreline in San Francisco, and it has all of these Bill Graham Presents old structures from the crazy big parties and concerts and the Grateful Dead shows. So it's great photo ops. There's like a big skull. There's this giant earth that I have a picture of me hanging from it. So that one's really fun. And you get, you know, the West Coast, it's beautiful access to all that produce in the San Joaquin Valley. And that's also an added bonus.
When you're cooking in Eden, it's always easy.
Exactly.
And Have you come up with any strange stipulations that the band requires? You know, I've heard these rumors about, like, no brown M&Ms. What's the deal with that?
So the deal is, not so much now because most of the venues are established, but when the first big rock concerts were happening indoors, it created some logistical issues, and the stakes are really high with rigging and setting up equipment and power sources and whether equipment could actually be brought in through the doors. So the tour managers would send out these riders that the venues were supposed to read and follow to the T. And so if the tour manager came in and saw that they hadn't sorted out the M&Ms, then they knew they hadn't read the rider, and they'd often put those towards the end. So they'd know that they hadn't read to the end of the rider and that probably their day was going to suck because the promoter hadn't really done their job. Yeah. So that's really the reason for it. It wasn't prima donna rock stars.
Oh, that's great to know. I'm so relieved. So do you have any really special road memories you want to share with us?
Gosh, well, some of them I probably can't talk about.
Okay.
But I mean,
but other than that,
but people think that it's this crazy lifestyle, and it's an intense job where you're working 15 hours a day. So I think it's a lot tamer than people assume, and people assume it's a party every night, and it's a lot more tame, but occasionally there'll be a bus party that's really great where a bunch of people just hang out on one of the buses, and there's lots of music, and there's dancing, and
how many buses are there in the caravan?
Oh, gosh. Between 8 and 11, depending on. The winter tour was bigger, and we had more equipment and more people, so that had more buses. But that's
between 8 and 11.
That's a lot of buses. Yeah.
Yeah, that's almost like a train on the road.
Well, catering has its own bus, so because there's enough of us, and then there's usually one other person on our bus. And then the band members each have their own bus at this point. So the main band members. So.
Oh my gosh, they each have their own bus. My goodness gracious. So tell me, you hear stories about road burnout for the rock stars. Do the rock star chefs get road burnout?
Oh, definitely. It's an intense job. It's hard on the body. It can be a little hard on the liver. And you're in close confines with a lot of people. I mean, you're living on a bus with seven other people, and you work with them for 15 hours a day, and then you're hanging out with them at night. So no matter, I mean, I love all of them, but sometimes, you know, you just really want to go be by yourself for a little while.
Yeah. So are you going back out on the road anytime soon?
Yes. Going out after Jazz Fest.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, great. Thanks so much for giving us this behind-the-scenes look at the boys in the band.
Well, thanks for having me, Poppy.
Ann Churchill, tour chef and founder of Karma Kitchen. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats. Edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Join us next week when we explore the effects of success on food TV.
It is amazing walking down the street with Sanchez and just seeing the goo-goo eyes. Every young lady, on it seems, in New Orleans has, you know, just watched this guy on episode after episode of Chopped. The way he handles it is through humility, and he'll go up and he'll hug and kiss and take pictures and engage the people, saying, hey, I'm just an ordinary guy.
Have you missed an episode of Louisiana Eats? Hear today's show or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com, where you can also subscribe to the podcast and take us with you wherever you go. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, French Market Coffee, and Rouse's Markets. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau, and from Tableau, Dickie Brennan's latest restaurant serving local Creole cuisine with a view of Jackson Square. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to producers Joe Schreiner, Sarah Holtz, and Reggie Morris. Come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eat studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, or see what we're up to at poppytooker.com. You can check us out on Instagram and Facebook as well. I'm Poppy Tooker. Louisiana Eats is a production of Poppy Tooker Broadcasting.